Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. And it feels like it's been a long week. And I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, why does it feel like it's been such a long week? And I don't know if it's because, you know, football's back or something like that, or maybe if it's because there's just been so much news with there being football back, you know, at least practice being back. And I was thinking about this, you know, on Tuesday, we had the reality. On Monday, I think this is right. I think my timing is right. On Monday, we had the story that Will Levis was essentially opting out of the 2025 NFL season. Now, Corey Curtis was on earlier today, and I completely agree with him that it doesn't really make a difference in this upcoming season. I think Levis was going to be the third-string quarterback behind Brandon Allen anyways, so that doesn't really bother me, but I did feel like he was quitting on the team. So that was Monday, and that was a big story. Then on Tuesday, Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi met with the media, and on Tuesday, they basically told you, this team's not going to be very good. Fans, be patient. We got a lot of work to do on the roster. Then on Wednesday, they had their first day of practice. Cam Ward spoke with the media. Then on Thursday, they had their second day of practice. And I heard Connor in the update, who was at practice. I wasn't at practice. I've been sick all week. But I did hear Connor in the update talk about Cam Ward had an up and down day as far as practice was concerned the other day. And I'm like, has it been up and down? It just sounds like talking to everybody that it's been kind of more down, but that we shouldn't read too much into it because it's only been two practices. But that's a lot of information to go through in the span of a week. And so I keep thinking back to what we've learned this week, and it's that right now, Titans fans are at a point where when it comes to this upcoming season, it's really about two things. It's about Callahan and Cam Ward. And they go hand in hand, but it's really just about those two things. Brinker and Borgonzi have told you don't worry about winning or losing because they're not going to do a lot of winning. There's not really any other interesting players on the team. Can this guy develop into a star? Can that guy? It's Ward. And when it comes to Callahan, some people want to be overly optimistic. I think some people want to be honest. He's on the hot seat. Chad Withrow joins us now on the program from Outkick, as he always does on a Friday. So, Chad, let's start here. The week starts with the Will Levis news. We'll get to that in a little bit. But then Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi tell the fans, be patient. And when Big Joe asked them, hey, do you think the team you put on the field can win the Super Bowl? They chuckled. And finally, Mike Borgonzi said, well, that's always the goal, but we got a lot of work to do on the roster. So with that being said, if you are a Titan fan, what is the excitement for this upcoming season? What is there to look forward to this year?
Seeing the new stadium. I know it's not this season, but next season maybe. Look, the excitement is Cam Ward. I mean, that's it. Like, I don't know what this Titans team can do to sell anyone on anything other than you drafted a quarterback number one overall, and hopefully he's going to be the savior of the franchise. Because there's not been a lot of good done by this team in recent years, whether it be in the draft and free agency or anywhere else. So I just don't think that there is a lot of eyes on. Here's a good example. I have a good friend who was going to go to Titans practice yesterday, and they said, who should I be watching out for in practice? And I was really at a loss. I'm thinking, I mean, watch Cam Ward and see how the coaches interact with the players, but there's just no one to get that excited about right now. Maybe that player emerges, but yeah, it's all about the quarterback right now for the Titans because it's hard to have a lot of hope based on them getting rid of Mike Vrabel and then what it's been like since that happened. You know, Mike Vrabel's at least interesting. He's snapping at reporters. That was fun to watch. That was a nice flash in the past also, but there's just not a lot there. I mean, I'm having a hard time answering the question because really the only answer to me is Cam Ward. I don't think Brian Callahan's that interesting in watching him this year because I just don't have a lot of faith in this team or this organization right now in the direction they've been heading.
Here's what bothers me about the Callahan thing. So I feel like I am one person on an island when it comes to fairly assessing Callahan. I listened to Charles Robinson this morning on with Paul and Joe, and he asked them, like, hey, have there been any kind of boneheaded things Callahan's done? And they're like, no, he just had a bad roster last year. And I'm like, that is so not true. Like, yeah, they had a bad roster last year, but, I mean, the special teams last year during the season, anybody remember that? Anybody remember against Green Bay when Malik Willis came in here and crushed them? And Callahan got booed by the fans, so he called timeout, went for it on fourth down, didn't get it? I mean, it was obvious Callahan looked in over his head last year. And they're just like, yeah, no, it's just a bad roster. And I feel like I'm the only person in town who's saying, what does Callahan do well? And looking for an answer. And other than be nice to the media, Chad, I don't know of anything at this point that he's demonstrated that he does well. Do you?
No, and I think that what's concerning to me about Callahan, and I know that we've talked a little bit about it, he's got a little Butch Jones to him, and I just keep having these alarm bells going off every time I hear him speak that there's some Butch Jones there. I don't think he's a terrible coach. I don't think he did a terrible job a year ago. He didn't do a good job. So he's 0-for-1 because that's his 1 year and one opportunity as a head coach. I just think it's really hard, Jared, because I'm constantly comparing the Titans, not just to the current league, but to the Titans of the previous 7 or 8 years and the Titans under Mike Vrabel. And whether you loved or hated Mike Vrabel, I knew what Mike Vrabel was.
Yeah.
I knew what the Titans were going to be. Yeah, he had a rough last season and a half, no doubt about it. And he wasn't completely innocent in getting himself fired. But I felt like he was a good coach. I still feel like he's a good coach. I felt like as long as he was there, the Titans were headed in the right direction eventually, as long as, you know, they were having sound managerial decisions being made and a good GM. I just don't – it's hard to get a sense of what the Titans are unless Cam Ward comes in and completely saves their bacon.
What do you make of the fact that the Titans brass – got up on Tuesday and basically went to the wall for Callahan? Both Brinker and Borgonzi, who was not here when Callahan got hired. Some people think that's a sign that, hey, they're going to stick with Callahan no matter what, because it would be detrimental to Cam Ward for them to fire him after 1 year. What do you make of it?
I mean, I think that's what they're going to say, because they're all in the same foxhole right now together, and they're all going to speak glowingly of each other. I can't really take much away from it. And I have watched the question from Big Joe and the answers from those guys. And, I mean, their reaction tells you everything that you need to know, right? Like, they know the score. They know what they're in for. They know that this roster is not good enough. And they couldn't even with a straight face just say, yeah, we have a chance, and go to – there's plenty of examples of teams that no one expected much from that did something. Hell, Washington a year ago, I could point to and say they were in the NFC Championship game, and no one was expecting much from them. I mean, they could easily try to sell you on optimism that this is a team that, if all breaks right, could contend. But they didn't, because they know how bad the team is. So, yeah, I just look at this group as they're all in it together right now. If this thing goes south in a hurry, if Cam Ward looks really bad, they're all going to do their own private little politicking behind the scenes to try to look like the one that's least culpable for whatever's happening, and then we'll see what Amy Adams Strunk decides at the end of the year as to who's gone. It's hard to apply basic common sense structure to what's next for the Titans, because I really just don't know what Amy Adams Strunk is going to do from day to day with this team. So it's hard to tell who she favors and who she doesn't. It certainly seems like Chad Brinker is in that side of she favors him right now. Could that change with a bad start to the season or a terrible year? Maybe. But really, no one knows.
Chad, what did you make of the video the Titans put out? We played the cut a bunch. I can't get over the backwards cap, but I guess I'm just a curmudgeon. But Brian Callahan, you know, really trying to fire up the guy, saying, I believe in this team. This could be a damn good football team. What did you think of Brian Callahan's rah-rah speech?
I didn't even notice the backwards cap, honestly, until you said that. So that's that's not one that bothered me. That's the first time I thought about it. I mean, it looked like a guy trying to sell hope. And hope is not a strategy, right? Like, you have to have a game plan. You have to have a strategy. And that sounded like a guy trying to sell a group in a room that he knows probably isn't that jacked up about the season and trying to sell them on a vision that may or may not even exist. But he felt their
energy when they walked in the building that day.
Yeah, I want to see the video of Callahan getting on them. That's what I want to see. Will the Titans ever publish that? If he's ripping into his team, like that, that's what I want to see. Because that's a side, other than the one moment caught on the sideline where he got onto Will Levis, and we all know the question he asked him, what the bleep are you doing? And then he apologized for it.
Oh, that was
after
weak.
The game. And talked about how he didn't like that was caught, and, you know, I didn't want to get on my quarterback. I mean, come on, man. Like, Mike Vrabel's not apologizing for that. And that's what really bothered me. I want to see more of that side of Brian Callahan. That was my biggest point of, okay, maybe this guy does have something a year ago, because he responded exactly how everyone should respond to some boneheaded play that Will Levis made. I don't care about him being Tony Robbins or Butch Jones and standing in front of a group, you know, talking about the energy bus and waking up ready to go every morning and excited about practice. That a lot of coaches do that. It didn't really affect me one way or the other.
What did you make, Chad Withrow with us? What did you make the Will Levis news early in the week? Are you one that thinks that this is a sign that Levis is a quitter? Or do you think, hey, you know what? It was a good for him to get the surgery and to get healthy.
He's a quitter. I mean, like, I get why he's doing it, but he's a quitter. He's another symptom of what's going on in that building, of people being selfish. Remember the last dance? When Scottie Pippen was in the contract negotiation,
I thought the exact same thing, that I'm not going to mess up my summer.
Yeah, he's, why would I have surgery? I will do it right before the season. And then they cut to Michael Jordan, and remember what Michael Jordan said? Scottie was being selfish, was his response to it. I mean, that was my reaction. Will is being selfish. He's upset that he's no longer the crown prince of Nashville and a starting quarterback. So, you know, I'll wait it out and get surgery before the season so I don't have to sit through it.
So true. Chad Withrow with us from Outkick. The hot seat awakes next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106 for the game. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow with us from Outkick, as he always is on a Friday. Chad, do you have a thought, or do you want to go right to the hot seat?
Let's get right to it.
Number one, no first-team reps for Shedeur Sanders at Cleveland Browns camp. In fact, he's the only quarterback in 11-on-11 that so far has not gotten any first-team reps. Asked about it, Shedeur Sanders said that's out of his control. Joe Flacco took a day off. Kenny Pickett got the first-team reps. Dylan Gabriel has gotten first-team reps. Joe Flacco the next day got first-team reps. No first-team reps for Shedeur Sanders. Are you surprised? And what does it mean?
I'm a little bit surprised, and I think what it means is that they are going out of their way to show something and prove something to Shedeur Sanders about where everyone thinks his ego is, and they're trying to keep that ego in check. So they're not even going to do what they're doing for every other quarterback, including Dylan Gabriel. I still believe, though, Jared, that he will start a game before the season's over. I'm disappointed also because he's probably the most interesting thing about the Cleveland Browns. But, I am a little bit surprised. But also understanding that this is why they're doing it, is to continue to keep that ego in check.
Let me say this to your point about him being the most interesting thing. If he's the fourth string quarterback, that probably means he's going to play a lot in the preseason. All three of their games are nationally televised on NFL Network. I bet they get ratings, like get real TV ratings if Shedeur Sanders is playing in the preseason.
Totally agree. I'll watch. There's not a lot of reasons to tune into preseason football, but to watch Shedeur Sanders to see how he does, I'll keep an eye on that.
Number two, what was Jerry Jones thinking this week, criticizing Micah Parsons, mispronouncing his name, mispronouncing his agent's name, and criticizing Dak Prescott?
I'm thinking that Jerry Jones is really old, and he wants to win a Super Bowl, and he's probably, first off, let's start with there, he's really old, is what I think is part of it. And, yeah, I just don't think he's around to play games with these guys anymore that have not given him what he wants more than anything else in this world, which is their first Super Bowl since the mid-90s. So I think that's the message he wants to send more than anything else.
I was sitting there this morning thinking about this. I'm like, has he been like, you know what, no more Mr. Nice Guy. I'm going to get on these guys' asses. I'm going to get on Dak's ass and say, Dak, I'm paying you $60 million. You better play this season. and I'm going to get on Micah Parsons. You want me to pay you $40 million? You better go out there and sack the quarterback. Or is Jerry just an old cooter who's completely lost reality? And I can't decide.
I think it could be a little bit of both, honestly. I think it's a little bit of old man mixed with a little bit of I've had enough with these children, and I'm going to say exactly what I think, and I'm not going to soft pedal anything.
Number three, how do you feel about the Bengals and their horrible defense with holdouts Shamar Stewart and Trey Hendrickson, and how mad should Joe Burrow be?
Yeah, I'm watching quarterback. I'm not done with it yet. But Joe Burrow and that whole dynamic in Cincinnati is very interesting.
By the way, I think he's the coach of that team.
Joe Burrow is, yes.
Yes.
That they all look to him, and he's got a great hold on the team, it feels like. Just watching him and how he interacts, and he's so calm. Not good. I mean, if Cincinnati wants to have any shot at doing anything this year in that division, that they need both those guys to be good and engaged. So, yeah, I think it's bad for Cincinnati. But I agree with you. I think that Joe Burrow is a really good leader, and I think part of it is because he does stay so even-keeled the whole time. But that's a team that needs a kick in the you-know-what, I think, more than almost anyone else.
So I have this theory that because people are talking about Nick Saban, my theory is Nick Saban should be the next coach of the Bengals, because then Saban can actually be the coach and can get on everybody's ass, and Burrow can just worry about playing quarterback.
So Saban would be like 74 at this point, right? 73 or 74. I don't understand why an NFL team would want to do that. Like, I get Pete Carroll, but
Saban or Zach Taylor.
Well, I mean, go find a Ben Johnson or someone that you think is going to be a really good coach. I just don't know why you want to start
Saban or Ben Johnson.
A guy in his mid-70s.
Right now, you're an owner of a team. You want Saban or Ben Johnson?
I want to go find a good coach who's not 74 years old.
I'll take Saban.
Saban was not good in the NFL. He wasn't.
But he didn't have Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase.
But again, like if I am. If you think Nick Saban's going to come in and win a Super Bowl right away, a guy who bemoaned college football for becoming too much like the NFL, first off, he hates it. So you want to go hire that guy to be an NFL head coach now. I don't think that's the right move at all. If I'm an owner, I'm not interested in hiring a coach to start something in his mid-70s.
I think the reason that Saban hated what happened to college football was because the deck was no longer completely stacked in his favor. He goes to Cincinnati. He's got the opportunity to prove he can coach in the NFL, which is still hanging over his head. And he's got the deck stacked in his favor because he's got Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase in every game he plays in.
Well, yeah, but and then wait until, you know, Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart hold out under contract.
Yeah, save one like that.
Square one of being pissed off again, because how are these guys getting paid so much money and unhappy? That's
he'd be up Mike Brown's
there.
Rear end, though, as well. Like Mike Brown would never hire Saban. He'd be too much.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think Nick Saban's coaching again. I just have a hard time believing he's going to coach anywhere. But, hey, I guess there certainly are worse. There are coaches with worse track records out there than Nick Saban, even in the NFL.
Number four, what does the Big Ten's inability to win any public support at media days for either their 4-4-2-2 college football playoff model or the bitching that they did about the SEC with 8 conference games and the fact that they played 9. Throw in James Franklin's comments trashing the conference for holding media days in Vegas. What does that tell you about the Big Ten's power in college football?
I just think they keep fighting the wrong battle. You know, everywhere. Like, stop talking about – a great example is Kurt Cignetti. You know, talking about when he's asked about dropping the Virginia game. Oh, we're going to take an SEC approach to our schedule now. And I'm thinking, dude, you know, Georgia, look at the SEC and who they're playing. Texas A&M's playing Notre Dame. LSU's playing Clemson. Like, you can go down the list. Tennessee's playing Syracuse. That's far better than any non-conference opponent that Indiana plays. Plus, all these schools play an SEC schedule. I just think they're barking up the wrong tree. And whenever you pick the wrong hill to die on, you're going to look stupid. So I think Tony Petitti's a good leader. I think he's a fine commissioner. Everything Greg Sankey says about him seems to be like a guy who is confident and does have some respect. I just think when you say dumb things, there are ways to go after the SEC. because the SEC is too up its own butt at times, especially with the media that covers it. But that's not the way. Like, for Kurt Cignetti, oh, we're going to schedule like SEC teams. I'm like, dude, look at every SEC team schedule and look at yours. And then let's talk ball, because that's not the hill you want to die on.
Did you see what Pat Forty wrote? Speaking of Petiti, did you see what Pat Forty wrote about him?
I've not seen that.
Forty talked to a source who said that Petiti has lost the room and, quote, is way out over his skis in reference to the playoff model. Basically, Petiti's getting an earful from NBC and CBS saying we want better games because they're paying a combined $700 million for six of the top 50 games. Meanwhile, ABC's paying less than half for 34 of the top 50 games. So he's getting an earful from the TV partners. He's getting an earful from the coaches, and he's not making any progress. I am not convinced Petiti knows what he's doing.
Well, I'll say this. If he's getting an earful from the TV networks, he's going to bend the knee to the TV networks because that's his background. So I think that's going to ultimately be what makes the decisions for him, will be what television tells him to do.
How much do you care about Bill Belichick's North Carolina Tar Heels? ESPN expected to air in good slots 8 of Carolina's 12 games.
I care a lot. I mean, there's not a lot of ACC teams I care about going into the season, but North Carolina's one of them. I'm excited to see what he can do. The Jordan Hudson stuff has quieted down. So is she going to be someone that the ESPN cameras are going to find? Is she going to be some sort of distraction during the season? It doesn't seem like she's been on the radar much here recently. So, yeah, I mean, it's Bill Belichick in college. Look, the reverse. You know, we just got done talking about Nick Saban. If Nick Saban coaches an NFL team, suddenly I'm very interested in that NFL team. Same goes for Bill Belichick. I want to see if he can make this work. I want to see how he looks on a college sideline. I want to see if he can surprise some people at North Carolina. Maybe he's still got a little magic left.
By the way, there's breaking news. Shamar Stewart has agreed to terms on his fully guaranteed contract. Pelissero reports, after a lengthy standoff over contract language, Stewart got improved payout language and can now get on the field. I really want to see that, though. I wonder who actually blinked. Was it Stewart? Was it the Bengals? They're making it sound like it was the Bengals, but Pelissero's probably hearing that directly from the agent. It will come out in a couple hours who actually blinked.
Well, hey, Nick Saban loves that news, Jared. There you go. As the next coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, he is eating that news up right now.
I don't think Nick Saban likes Shamar Stewart very much. Guy doesn't produce it all in actual games, but what do I know? Finally, Chad, absolute tragic news at our station this week about the passing of Aaron Donick. I know that you've worked with Willie going way back to your days at 104.5, and so your memories and your thoughts on Aaron Donick.
Yeah. Very, very sad, first and foremost, and obviously praying for Willie and Evie and Mahoney and the entire family. Erin was such a great – she was a great unifier. She brought people together. That's what I remember about her so much. Every room that she walked into, that room was brighter because of Erin. Before I married my wife, Angie, she set me up on a date with one of her friends right when she met me. Immediately looking out for other people. And I became a friend with the person that we went on the date with. I house sat for the Donick. She was just such a presence and a light. And everyone she met, it was like she was wanting everyone to continue that circle and meet other people that she liked when she came in contact with people. And I'll always remember that. And, you know, when I heard the news that she was so sick, it was just so tragic because of the life force that she was at all times. So, look, to know Aaron Donick was to be a better person, and I'm thrilled that I got to know her. And it's been too long since I've seen her, but every time I was around her, it was such a shot of energy. So I'm thankful for that. And, again, just really thinking about Willie, his entire family, and the entire 102.5 family as well, because I know everyone there at that station loved her as well.
Everybody did. You know, it's funny. I all the sentiment that you had, I felt as well. I was just totally gutted when I heard the news about Aaron at the beginning, before she passed away, when I heard that she was sick. But what really stood out to me was, like, I hope we've done a good job this week. You know, when we've talked about her, and I know Willie talked about her, and, you know, and just was breaking down. And it got me listening this morning when Joe and Paul played it. Paul had very nice words to say about Aaron. Everybody did. But I hope we've done a decent enough job of really portraying to the people what kind of person she was, because everybody, I think, feels the exact way that you just said, Chad. And I just want everybody to know the kind of person she was, because we should all try to be more like Aaron Donick in our lives.
Absolutely. I forget who said it. I thought the piece in the Tennessean was really well done.
Yeah.
But I forget who said it, but that, you know, Aaron made everyone feel better about themselves. And that she had so many people that when they were going through tough times or dark times in their life, tragic times, they went to Aaron Donick. And I think that just shows her humanity so much. But it was just someone you were always excited to see. You know, years after I worked with Willie, if I was at an event at a Predators game or a Stars event, I mean, just seeing Aaron and the hug she'd come up and give you, it really does. It's amazing how much things like that can leave an impression on people. And she left an impression on everyone she ever came in contact with. And for that, I'm grateful. And I know everyone that can hear this that ever met Aaron Donick is grateful as well.
You know, I'm going to tell a quick story just because, it's pretty revealing about my life. But I think it's fair. I mean, whatever. People can think whatever they want. I told this to Mahoney earlier today. So Lindsay and I found out we were pregnant, like, I don't know, 4 months into knowing each other. I mean, I'm being completely honest. This wasn't something that we were planning. Look, we love our son and we're glad it happened, but it wasn't something we were planning. And so Lindsay came like a week after we found out we were pregnant. Lindsay came to a station party that we had at Jasper's. And I remember when she got there and I was introducing her to everybody, because I'm sitting there thinking like, hey, like, I'm about to tell these people in a couple of months that I'm having a child with this woman, so it might as well be nice that she get to know the people that I work with. But the person that I was most excited to introduce her to was Aaron. And I was trying to think why. And it was because, like, first of all, Aaron Donick probably gives her approval on pretty much everybody. If you don't get Aaron Donick's approval, then you got to go look in the mirror. But it's almost like of everybody in the room, all the people I were, the person whose opinion I cared about the most was Aaron's. And I think that kind of encapsulates how I felt about her, and I'm sure how a lot of other people felt about her, too.
It's very well said, and I'll kind of close with this, too. And you're right about, you know, getting Aaron's approval, but wanting it, but also seeking her out in a crowded room. That was the same way for me when I was young and starting out in my early 20s in this business. If we were at an event, I would seek out Aaron Donick to talk to her. Evie and Willie have a daughter named Evie. I have a daughter named Evie. I'm not naming my daughter Evie if I didn't love Willie and Aaron, right? That name stuck out to me, and I remember it. Now, their full name is different, but they both go by Evie. But Willie and I have talked about it. You know, we both have our own Evie, and a big part of that is Aaron. And, you know, that's why the news hit so hard when I heard it earlier this week.
Chad, great stuff. Well said. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yep, Chad Withrow joining us on the program. Stillman and Company, we continue. 102.5, 106 for the game.
More comfortable in the day-to-day, much more comfortable being in a position in front of our football team as far as the leadership roles go, the accountability goes. Those things have all become much more comfortable for me, which is good. There's still things that I strive every day to be better at. And then just managing the role. There's just a lot that goes into it from an operations standpoint, from a scheduling standpoint, from a staff management to the players to the scheme part. All of those things I've feel like I've improved tremendously in a lot of areas. And I'm really, really looking forward to getting year two underway. And I think my excitement and my enthusiasm for where we're at and our potential to be a good football team is really high. And a lot of that comes from, I think, my own confidence in the role as it is. So that's a short answer to probably what could be a lot longer. But I feel really good about where I've developed too, just like our players probably do in their first year to their second year.
Brian Callahan feels great about this season. Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi the day before were like, Super Bowl, yeah. Look, man, we got a lot of work to do. And Brian Callahan's like, I think we'd be a good team this year, and I feel great about going into my second year. And maybe he's right. And maybe Callahan will look like a different man, a more informed coach, somebody who really did learn from the lows of last year and really took it on the chin. You know, Jim Schwartz, when he was defensive coordinator of the Titans, he was awful that first year he was defensive coordinator. After that, turned into one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL. It's possible. Bill Walsh cried on the plane on the way home after a Monday Night Football game in his second season leaving Miami, coaching the 49ers. Did not think he could be a head coach in the NFL at that point. One of the greatest coaches ever. So who knows? But here's my advice for Brian Callahan, if I may give it to him. And not only am I going to give him my advice, but if he does this, even if he does it exactly as I say he should do it, I will get no credit, because the second I say, oh my God, he was listening to the show and he made the perfect call, people are going to say, you think too much of yourself, Jared. But I'm going to give it anyways. The Pads go on next week. If I'm Brian Callahan, I call Arden Key into my office and I level with him. And I'm picking Arden Key for a specific reason. I tell Arden Key, Arden, you know that I've got to be tougher on this team. Yes, coach. You know that I've got to really hold these young guys accountable here and get this thing right back on the train tracks. Yes, sir. Arden, you know you're a guy I can count on. Yes, sir. When the Pads go on, I need you to mouth off or push somebody down or throw a punch or something. And when you do, I am going to go off on you in front of everybody, in front of the fans, in front of the players, in front of the media, and I am going to kick you out of practice. And I'm going to make you make the walk of shame. I'm going to send Jeb from security to walk your ass into the facility. And then after it's over, you and I, it'll be our little secret. I think Arden Key would understand. The reason I'm picking Arden Key is because Arden Key is a legitimate veteran who's been on the team for years. Everybody knows Arden Key puts the team first. There's no question as to whether or not Arden Key is a committed player. No question to the media, no question to the fans, no question to anybody inside the locker room. They all know Arden Key cares about the team. Number two, so it wouldn't hurt Arden Key's reputation if he got in a little skirmish in practice and Callahan kicked him out. Number two, Arden Key talks a lot. And if you're going to make this, if you're going to stage this, but you want it to not look staged, you need somebody who this could actually happen to. I mean, if Chigakonkwo, who's probably afraid to step on a fly out there on the field, if Chigakonkwo gets into a fight and he goes all, everybody knows that that's probably fake. But not Arden Key. And I think Arden Key's a veteran. And he understands what Callahan's trying to accomplish here. And the other thing, too, is when you get set up for something like this, there's going to be a lot of talk. Callahan kicked out Arden Key today. Callahan stood up to Arden Key. And also, Arden Key is a bigger guy. Now, look, he's not Simmons, but he is a bigger guy. And most importantly, Arden Key's not Simmons. With Simmons, there's no way you can trust Simmons will not take it too far or won't get upset when people talk about him getting kicked out of practice to then blow the cover on the story. I don't trust Simmons. He's too volatile. And not only that, this message is really for Simmons as much as it is for the younger guys. I wouldn't tell Arden Key that, but it is for it's for the veterans too. And so I think if Brian Callahan were to get an opportunity, they may start fights anyways, but if Brian Callahan were to get an opportunity to lay into Arden Key, this isn't like throwing Bryce Oliver out of practice. Woo, big deal. I think if he were to get the opportunity to throw Arden Key out of practice, to stand up to Arden Key and to embarrass him and send his ass out of there, the opposite of what he did last year, I think the media walks away from practice saying, Callahan has shown growth. And I think that does a lot more for him and what people inside that building and what people outside that building think of him than just some rah-rah speech with a backwards cap on. That's just me. And again, if this happens, if they put the pads on Monday or whatever day they put the pads on, if they put the pads on and Arden Key hits Cam Ward late, and one of the offensive linemen turns around and pushes Arden Key down, and Arden Key gets to it, and Callahan blows the whistle, and he lays into Arden Key, and he sends him out. You know as well as I do, that'll be the story of camp that day, that Callahan stood his ground. And the second thing is, you know that even if we play this audio recording back of me saying this is what he needs to do, everybody will say, oh, come on, Jared, he didn't listen to you. So that's my advice. This upcoming week for Brian Callahan, that's my advice. Get Arden Key on the same page. Have him push down Cam Ward. Kick him out of practice. Earn respect. Isn't it Orson Welles that used to hire people just to fire him so that he would get everybody's respect? That's my advice. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game. I need to give everybody some advice as we head out to the weekend on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. So, well, you know the whole story with the NFLPA and their head and everything else, and you know how they expense trips to the strip club, and now he's resigned, and J.C. Treader, the president of the players, he's resigned. And a criminal investigation, this is ESPN, Kalen Kaler and Don Van Natta Jr., a criminal investigation into finances of the NFL Players Association includes potential misuse of funds and self-enrichment by union officials, according to a confidential document obtained by ESPN. The scope of the federal investigation was outlined in a memo titled Crisis Management, drafted by a senior union attorney and shared with the NFLPA's executive committee and player representatives this week. Again, you know what that's about, right? It's about the strip clubs. They expend $700 for a ride to the strip club and apparently like $2,000 at another strip club in Atlanta. One was in Atlanta, one was in Miami. Now, I don't go to the strip club. I don't think I've been to a strip club in 10 years. But at the same time, I'm not ruling out that at some point in my life, there may be a time where we end up at the strip club, right? Everybody's hanging out in Vegas. People have a couple drinks. Somebody goes, let's go to the strip club. All right, yeah, okay. We end up at Spearmint Rhine. I don't know. Let me give everybody some advice here. I don't expense a lot of things at work, things I probably could, because it's kind of a hassle. And at the end of the day, when something's $11, is it really that big of a deal? But I also don't make $3.5 million like Lloyd Howell Jr. did, the former president of the NFLPA. Never, ever, 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 ever expense something at the strip club. Never. I don't care if you're a pimp and you're going to meet potential clients. Don't expense anything from the strip club. Because when you expense something, there's documentation of it. And when there is documentation of something, it means that at some point, somebody else might see it. And if somebody else might see it, that means there's a chance everybody else might see it. There are certain things to put the corporate card away for. The strip club is probably one of them. Not only did they not use the corporate card, they tried to expense it. They tried to get their own points. They were trying to get reimbursed. I saw this with a congressman a couple of months ago or a year ago or something like that. They looked into his finances. He was using campaign funds for OnlyFans. Talk about for the people. Again, if you want to gamble, if you want to drink, if you want to smoke pot where it's legal, if you want to do gummies, if you want to go to the strip club, if you want to go to one of those countries where prostitution is legal, like Amsterdam, that's your business, not mine. But the second you start expensing that stuff is the second somebody's going to find out about it. So let this be a lesson. At the end of the day, is the $700 you were going to get back for the strip club trip, is that worth a federal investigation? Is that worth, for somebody who I saw is worth nine figures, is that worth everybody knowing that for your job as president of the union, you went to the strip club twice? Again, that's my advice for the weekend, kids. Be safe. Stillman and Cuppy, we'll see everybody Monday at 2.